Welcome to this week's 2 Men in the Middle. This is where 2 men in the middle of America talk about politics and current events. I'm Craig Huey.
I'm Brandon Kinnig.
It feels like we haven't done this in like a month.
It's been a couple weeks, but it feels longer just because of the election and everything that's transpired.
We're in the dog years of the Trump presidency, where every day, every week, every month, every hour
is an eternity.
Yeah. Is an eternity as you just wait for the next horrible thing to go wrong. So the last time we got together, we were talking about the results of the midterm elections. There is still one race that they have not called yet out in California, but as we were talking about, we were warming up. It looks like the Democrats have made a clean sweep of what once was very deep red California.
Yes,
and they're going to hit the 40 seat barrier in the House. So by every account, this was a wave election.
A landslide win, wave election. And again, I think that we often get caught up in the election night narrative without realizing that so many races go beyond election night. And there's so many outcomes that we don't know until days, weeks later. And this is a good example of that. Every race that was outstanding past election night has gone in the Democrats' favor.
Yeah.
Which tells you the extent of this wave. And it's also, if you look at it from a raw seat perspective, it's the third best outcome since Watergate for any party. It's only surpassed by the 1994 Republican landslide and the 2010 Republican House gains. And then if you look at it from a raw vote total across the country, that's really where you see the difference. It's well over 8 million votes.
Yeah.
So it's the largest gain by any party, largest span.
Yeah.
Ever that any party has been able to put up. So that's telling. And that's also telling because the seat number of seats only tells one part of the story because of the gerrymandering. You know, if you go back to pre-2010 and you had the prior House districts in place, we would be looking at probably like 60 seats, 60 to 70 in terms of, but we're only looking at, you know, 40 because of the gerrymandering that was done.
And you said it before, another 60 seat wave's not going to come because the districts just aren't set up that way.
And the funny thing here is when Republicans drew these maps, they intended to give themselves a majority that would last at least a decade, and that didn't quite hold, obviously.
Well, I think what's interesting is that, and this held in California in these late elections, is that the suburban and urban areas are almost exclusively Democratic right now.
Correct.
Republicans got completely wiped off the face of the map in anything but rural areas.
And Orange County is the perfect example of that. Orange County was a longtime Republican bastion. That's
very
where so
Republican.
Many Republican office holders came from. Ronald Reagan referred to it as Republican heaven. You know, for those that are not familiar with it, Orange County is the outlying suburbs of L.A.
Yeah.
You know, places like Laguna Beach.
Very white, very educated, yes. Very well-to-do.
Yeah. White, upper-educated professionals, a lot of moderate Republican women, and the Republicans got obliterated. There is not a single Republican congressional member left in Orange County when they dominated prior to this election. They had the majority of seats.
So you could go across the map. You could go East Coast. You could go Midwest. You could go Orange County on the West Coast. And all of the cities, suburban and urban areas, all voted similarly. Even in red states. It doesn't matter
if you're... Mia Love lost in Salt Lake City. And
doesn't matter if you're red state, blue state. What's mattering right now in this cycle is urban, suburban versus rural.
And some pundits have deemed that the new, what they call, metropolitan majority. So you have the urban and suburban areas voting in identical fashion. And so it's created this new majority. And the question is it permanent? Will it be long-lasting? And if so, that does not bode well for the Republicans because rural areas are getting smaller in terms of vote share and population.
Ohio kind of plays this out, too. The Democrats did not make the gains in Ohio outside of Sherrod Brown holding on to his Senate seat. But Ohio's population is getting older. More people are leaving Ohio. More people, yes, are moving rural to urban and suburban. But the suburbs there are emptying out as people just generally leave the state to go find better economic opportunity in other places.
Exactly.
So while the Democrats didn't see the type of gains maybe in Ohio as they saw in other states, the overall trend did hold. And the stats of, like you said, becoming now this urban-suburban majority that did play itself out Ohio is more evidence that is coming into effect.
Exactly. The demographic trends, if you look at which states are gaining population versus which are losing, which areas are gaining versus which are losing, you know, that does not bode well. And even on the Senate side, because we haven't revisited this since right after the election, the Democrats ended up picking up the Senate seat in Arizona, which had been a Republican-held seat.
Which we talked about. If the Republicans lost that seat, you could point right to Donald Trump and say, he cost you that seat. Because if Jeff Flake were not primaried, Jeff Flake would have won that seat.
Oh, absolutely.
And Trump has ripped Flake from day one. Here's what I understand. Trump has been to Arizona multiple times. He pardoned Joe Arpaio.
Yeah.
He gave one of his most fiery immigration speeches in Arizona. Remember the one with like the real weird black guy that was like had a shirt on or something? And the dude just looked like he was whacked out of his mind. He has focused on Arizona disproportionately to other states because, one, it's ground base for some of his immigration talk.
With it being a border state, yeah.
He focused on John McCain. I mean, he focused all of that energy on his differences with McCain, just to put it lightly.
Mildly.
And he still lost.
Right.
And again, it was because of that voter model that you just talked about. Suburban, urban areas, completely Democratic. In Arizona, those overwhelmed the rural areas, and they lost that seat.
Right. Well, and I can't remember which article, but there was a journalist who went out and interviewed moderate Republican women anecdotally, and there were several that said, I can't vote for Martha McSally because I would have sent a message to the president.
Yeah.
And so that's how that race turned. And also, that's a key state for 2020 in terms of the election map, the presidential election. And so if Donald Trump can't count on that state being in his column with the changing demographics, that doesn't bode well. I mean, Trump barely won it back in 2016. So that's why he's worried about that as well. And, you know, and they have another Senate election too. So, you know, that factors in.
So the theory is Atlanta, Georgia, Texas, Arizona are all trending blue. And
right.
There will come a time when that flips. And at that point, winning presidential elections for the Republicans now has to go through Florida and what was once the blue wall, the upper Midwest. You're going to have to consistently flip those red and keep those.
And again,
red.
Florida is still a 50-50 state.
Florida
is so
just a shit show.
I mean, so there is no, you know, a clear path. I mean, it's very rocky. And Atlanta, you know, there's another good one. You have a congressional race. Newt Gingrich's congressional seat that flipped blue. I mean, the seat that Newt Gingrich held and, you know, rode the 1994 Republican wave on is a blue seat now.
Yeah, that's amazing that Newt Gingrich's old seat has turned Democratic. Let's take 2020 off the table, because with Trump, it's hard to predict how any of this maps into 2020.
Right.
Because by 2010, Obama should have got wiped out in 2012. So let's take that off the table for now. What does this mean for the country for moving forward, or what moves forward over the next 2 years?
Well, I don't think you see much of anything. I mean, basically, Democrats were elected to be a obstacle to Trump, to be a barrier to his agenda and his policies. And so they are going to do that. So that is going to be where legislation stops. They are also going to be a check on his power. You're going to see a variety of hearings and investigations into various parts of his administration, cabinet officials, all the way to even issues involving his own wealth and conflict of interest. All of it's on the table.
So I saw you posted something on Facebook about, as a moderate Republican, you just get it from all sides. There's no place for you to turn.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well, and the New Yorker had a good article from a Republican congressman out of the Philly suburbs, Ryan Costello, who was like a quintessential moderate. He opted to retire instead of running again. And that's what he said. Probably a good decision. But he's like, you can't get any love because you're not completely accepted by Democrats because you're seen as still like not 100%. And then you have Republicans that don't see you as completely on their side because you're anti-Trump and you report his behavior. And so you're seen as suspicious by them. So you inhabit this just nebulous area in the middle where you really have no friends, no political friends.
Do you think at some point you're going to have to, do you think it will come back to you at some point? This is where I think Mike was, that eventually moderation wins, and that we'll find a way to get back together, we'll find common ground, and we'll move forward. Do you think that is your realistic political path forward, or you're going to be at some point in time just saying, well, these are my two choices. I'm really not excited about either one, but I'm going to have to find some way to move to one of these sides that just keep getting farther and farther apart from each other.
Well,
and I don't expect you to become a Democrat, but maybe within your own party. Hey,
right.
I'm going to have to go over here, or I'm going to have to go over here, but I can't. There is no middle ground left anymore.
Well, and that's true, and that's a big question. I don't think there's going to be moderates are going to be ascendant anytime soon, just based on the numbers and what happened with this election. Moderate Republicans got wiped out. That's how Democrats were able to post their wins. The Republicans left standing are the hardcore Trump loyalists in rural districts that did not lose. So that's the dynamic you have now, and you know, and the extremes, the fringes on each side have been dominant.
Yeah.
So from policy perspective, that's not changing. The question is, where are the parties going to go from here? Because there's this realignment happening. The Republican Party has morphed, and they're not, you know, the same party they were just a couple years ago. They're Trump's party, whatever that means. And so I think the question Republicans have to ask themselves is, do we just ride this out and wait for normalcy to return, even if it takes years? Or do we just sit on the sidelines? Do we become independent? Do we become power brokers and help out Democrats when it makes sense?
Yeah.
And then, you know, lend a hand to moderate Republicans? I mean, there's a number of options there. And so I'm sitting on the sidelines and kind of seeing what happens at the moment.
Wait and see.
Wait and see approach.
I think what's interesting is the 2010 midterms actually end tonight with the Senate runoff
in Mississippi.
And you can always count on deep southern states to provide the most entertaining.
They never disappoint.
They never, ever disappoint. I was enthralled with Roy Moore. I mean, Roy Moore was probably the worst candidate to ever seek statewide office in the history of the United States. I'm sure that statement isn't accurate. I'm sure somebody would be worse than Roy Moore.
Else.
But Roy Moore was a credibly accused pedophile.
Right. And even before those allegations came out, as a judge, I mean, he had been, you know, basically
twice he had gotten kicked off the bench.
Yeah, kicked off the Alabama Supreme Court.
He refused to take the religious symbols out of his court.
Right. And he has a history of just really awful statements that he's made about gays, about all kinds of, about liberals. I mean, he has completely shown his bias over and over again, which, again, you're not supposed to do if you're a judge, which doesn't seem to
Roy Moore was an awful candidate.
Yeah.
But my God, as for his entertainment value, it doesn't get any better than that.
No.
When he rode up to vote on the horse, and I mean, Roy Moore was just, he was a character right out of Central Casting.
Yeah.
And he only lost by 2-ish points. That was
a
fairly close
51-49 election.
We're just renting that seat. That seat goes back to you guys.
Yeah, assuming Roy Moore doesn't set out running again and get the
anybody
nomination.
Anybody other than Roy Moore runs, you're going to win that seat back. So now we have
Cindy Hyde Smith,
who was appointed when Thad Cochran, I think for health reasons, didn't he step down?
Yeah, he resigned his seat. She was appointed to the seat. She hasn't held it for very long, so she's running for her own term now.
She strikes me, and she is generic United States Senator A.
Yeah.
She's not going to do anything of substance. All she's going to do, just like if Roy Moore would have won election, not going to be the head of any really committees, not really going to drive any policy. They're just there to be a solid Republican vote.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what most senators basically do. So all she has to do is sit there and not make the unforced error,
right.
And she rolls to a 15-point victory, and we all march
pretty
on.
Pretty easy, yeah. Doesn't even have to campaign.
She could not execute that simple game plan.
No. You know, she made a statement for those that are unaware about when she was talking to a supporter about how she would, you know, go to a public hanging.
And if you don't know the history of public hangings in the South, you might want to Google that a little bit.
Right. Mississippi, out of all the southern states, probably has the most violent history when it comes to segregation and when it comes to racism, treatment of blacks.
It's not a real positive part of the American experience or history.
And as an aside, there's a film called Mississippi Burning, which is a really great film.
Might want to look at that.
Right. So there have been hundreds and hundreds of blacks that were hanged, you know, throughout the decades in Mississippi, you know, and it was a very violent struggle for civil rights. And so to make that kind of a statement, especially in the 21st century, you know, in 2018, again, it like what era are you coming out of? I mean, this is not.
I hate that as Democrats, one of our go-to moves is every Republican is a homophobe and a racist, when that's simply not.
It's simply not true.
It's simply not true. But at the same time, your side continually serves up these little moments that allows the overreaction on my side. I don't know. I really don't know anything about Cindy Hyde Smith. But I do know if you're a woman from Mississippi running for Senate, you don't use that reference.
Right.
You don't go anywhere near that reference. MSNBC had a guy on who was from Mississippi. His beat was Mississippi politics. He was a local journalist, and the MSNBC anchor sitting in New York was steadfastly making the point that the pictures of Cindy Hyde Smith and the Confederate hat and at the Confederate Museum, you know, what impact will that have on Mississippi voters? And he's like, well, the governor is a card-carrying member of the Sons of the Confederacy, so probably none.
Yeah.
And they were somehow, you know, sitting in their studio in New York City, shocked and surprised that, hey, wearing a Confederate soldier cap, and I admit, before I saw the picture, you would have thought she wrapped herself in a Confederate flag.
Right.
I mean, okay, is that distasteful? Yes.
Right.
But in Mississippi.
It's Mississippi. And let's not forget, Mississippi is the only southern state left that actually has the Confederate battle flag within their state flag still. They haven't modified it.
The two senators from Mississippi are the only two senators who do not fly their flag at the Capitol.
Right.
Because of it has a Confederate symbol in it. And they just refuse to take it out.
Yeah.
Mississippi is a strange, wonderful political place. Cindy Hyde Smith rolls to a 10 to 12 point. If somehow SB wins this, and he's carrying some baggage of his own.
Yeah.
He was accused. He was part of what, the Clinton administration?
I mean,
he goes back a long way.
He's been in politics a while.
He was actually accused of something and beat it in court, I believe. He was accused of bribery or corruption or something. He has his own set of baggage that he's dealing with. I don't see any way that election doesn't go for any way but the Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, based on the sure numbers, I mean, you would have to, we talked about this, an extraordinary number, 20% of Republicans would have to flip over to vote for him.
That's not going to happen.
No, I think that a good success for him would be if he makes it, you know, between 41% and 44%.
Yeah.
That's considered very high. That's considered out of the ordinary for a Democrat in Mississippi. Yeah.
Mississippi is the most racially divided electorate in the United States.
Yes.
So she'll win that seat. So that will put your gain at 2. You'll go from 51 to 53.
Right. So two seat gains.
Two gains in the Senate, which again, I think that was the best possible outcome
they could have hoped for.
The Democrats could hope for. Well, when Tester won, when Arizona won, those were what kept it really from being a bad night for the Democrats in the Senate.
Well, let's not forget, at one point, Republicans were pretty cocky that they could get 60 seats almost close to that. So, I mean, considering this was their most favorable map ever and that they will likely ever have for decades, I mean, holding them to just 2-seat gain was...
We held serve enough to put it back in play in 2020.
Right.
And I think that was Nelson hurt. Wish we could have kept that, but hey, it's Florida. If you're counting on Florida for anything, nobody thought we were going to win Tennessee. Love you, T Swift, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So to wrap up the 2010 midterm, now that we've got a complete picture of everything that happened, I don't think we could have hoped for anything more.
Yeah.
Would been nice to take the Ohio governorship, but we took the governorships back in rebuilding the blue wall through Wisconsin,
Michigan.
That's huge. Florida passing the 1.4 million felon vote restore. Yeah. That's huge. So
plus seven governors, right? Were there seven governor pickups, I think?
I think we went seven or eight.
Yeah.
Six, seven, or eight, somewhere in there.
Something like that. And then if you look at down ballot, 300 state legislative seats were picked up.
I heard something that from Obama's election in 2008, for the 8 years he was in office, we lost 900 elections.
Oh, it was brutal.
Total from local, state, federal level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Democrats were just wiped out during Obama's presidency.
And I think what happened is that destroys your bench. You have to have a pipeline of people that are coming up through the ranks, both federally and the governorships.
And the Democrats are doing that now. Yeah. They're rebuilding.
I think we rebuilt a lot of that.
And those seats matter
years.
A lot heading into Donald 2020 Trump. Because of redistricting, because that's done at the state houses. And so that'll be done again in 2020.
We could have never have done that without Trump.
No.
There's a direct link to the distaste for him amongst women and suburban
voters. Have Congress now. There's no way without him.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, everything was stacked against us, and Trump just hand delivered that.
That's right.
So that's the 2010 election. We talked about it again. There's 6,000 new topics.
What direction do we go? Yeah.
We got to talk about the border.
Yes.
And that one is a little bit of a. It's hard for my side to talk about this. I think it's hard for me to talk about this without just going directly in the tank, picking up a bunch of progressive Democratic talking points and avoiding
and
the facts
emotion.
On the ground. So I could easily stand up and shout, "Oh my God, we gassed people, we wore that's ridiculous."
Well, there's always a single photo of the woman with the child.
Absolutely.
You see over and over again. Yeah.
As the United States, should we ever, if we don't have, should we ever launch? No, we shouldn't. Is this the first time this has happened at the border?
No.
Absolutely not. Did this happen under Obama?
Yes.
Yes, it did. So first off, anybody who thinks, I'm a big pile on Trump for the immigration issue as anybody, but anybody thinks that this is the first time a caravan has gotten to the border, tried to get through, and we used pepper spray, tear gas, and non-lethal methods to repel that's just simply not true.
It's not true. The difference is it's receiving much more media attention now because of the rhetoric and because
Trump wants it to.
Right. Yeah.
I think too. Is this a caravan of all women and children? No. There's a lot of single men.
A lot of men there
who are
too,
in this
yeah.
too. Are most of these people trying to seek asylum? No. They're looking to get to America for better economic opportunities and a better life, which I'm fine with. To me, that's a great excuse to come to America. That's
right.
What made America great. Should we be encouraging that? I think so. But still, there's a way and there's a process to
yeah.
do that.
You want to encourage it the right way. But at the same time, again, there's balance. You want to be able to, handle, the flow and those that come here with dignity, even if they come here illegally, and that's why, people were horrified with the camps that were set up and the separation of women and children earlier this year. But I think the problem is when people paint like this whole caravan as monolithic. They're not all here for the same reason,
no,
and that's a problem.
They're not.
Yeah.
And there was the reporter from MSNBC who, again, the studio host who was desperately trying for those establishing shots of the women and the children, and they're there.
Yeah.
We're not saying they're not, but when asked, he said, no, over 50% of this caravan is men, single men, men by themselves who are coming to America for a better economic opportunity, a better life.
Right.
And when I asked them are you seeking asylum? They could not articulate what they would be seeking asylum for. Now, Trump has slowed down the asylum seeking process. He's had the horrible separation policy. He has done everything he can to create this situation.
Oh, he has. And I think that should be the bigger story, because he is doing everything in his power to limit immigration, including legal immigration.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's trying to place very drastic limits on legal immigration to the country.
That's such a great point. For Trump, this isn't about illegal immigration. This is about chain migration or family migration. This is about the visa lottery,
which actually
lies about constantly.
Chain migration benefited his wife's parents, who were able to get here because
this is about Trump fundamentally changing who has access to the United States.
Right.
And I think that's where most people find this distasteful, maybe what we're doing.
I mean, Trump himself said he wants more people from Sweden and Norway, remember? I mean, that's who he's going after.
Because, Brendan, so many people flee good economic situations, good health care, you know. Yeah, I mean, the flood.
He wants beautiful blonde
women,
let's be honest. You know, it's just more beautiful blonde women.
It's just brutal. And I think that's where people... There's a narrative Trump could play to say, listen, we can't allow hundreds of people to rush the border at one time.
We have to have law and order, yeah.
I don't want to gas anybody. I don't want to tear gas women and children, but we do have to maintain a border. But because of all the other shit he's done, he's lost that argument now.
Right. The problem is, you see what happened in light of everything he's said and everything he's done.
Yeah.
And so it makes it worse. And if, for example, when Obama did it, it was still in the context of Obama wanting to improve immigration laws, to open them up, to, you know, to reform them and, you know, ways to bring them into the 21st century. And Trump is steadfastly opposed to all of that.
So as you just said, too, I think both of us agree that this is a legislative problem that needs to be solved.
Yes.
We need an overhaul of our current immigration laws and policies. Do you have any expectation we're capable of doing that right now?
No.
No.
I mean, Congress has abdicated that for so long, and now that you have both houses divided, you know,
there's
one Republican-controlled, one Democrat, it's not going to happen.
Do you think... My biggest fear...
We can't even resolve the issue with the Dreamers. You have 90% of Americans that agree on that, and we can't resolve that.
If we can't do that, because Trump linked the Dreamer policy
to
ending chain migration, and the visa lottery. And he basically said, if you want this, you have to fundamentally change the way we look at immigration in this country. I just don't understand why this is his fight. I just don't get... And as a Republican, you've got to know that in the long run, and by long run, I mean the next 20, 25 years, this issue is a loser for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to give you a little bit right now, but that whatever bump you get out of this ends the second Trump's out of the White House.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same scenario that played out on the state level in California with Prop 82 under Governor Pete Wilson, you know, that was seen as very kind of anti-Hispanic, and that played well for the Republicans in the short term. But over the years, that resulted in the Republicans being wiped out of power in California because of demographic trends. Same thing's going to happen nationally. And so but the problem is Trump saw that as his key to victory in the 2016 election. I mean, he ran on a hodgepodge of, you know, populist sentiment, but the overarching cry was build the wall.
And I think we haven't given Trump enough credit for his ability to stay on message.
Yeah.
Everybody thought, well, the caravan will die. This was a made-up political stunt for the midterms. No, this is at the core who Trump is.
It's who he is. And it's the best way he can exploit fear. Yeah, I mean, immigration is the best driver for that, the best vehicle.
For people who thought Trump was going to give up the core message of there are people here who are wronging you, who shouldn't be here anyway, and I'm going to do something about it. No, as long as Trump is in power, that's going to be the card he plays
Well, it's really his only card, because other than the economy, which who knows where the economy will be in 2020, we could be, you know, leveling off or even heading back into a recession with the way things are cyclical. But outside of that, I mean, his only success was passage of the tax cuts.
But we're in the greatest economy the world's ever seen. We're in the greatest period of economic growth. You mean to tell me that's not going to last forever?
Yeah, that's not how economics works. Yeah.
That's not what the president's telling me.
And there's already issues with the stock market. So stock market growth is slowing if you look at individual portfolios, you know, and then employment, everything will catch up to that. But it's cyclical. And so this cycle can only last so long. And if you combine that, too, with interest rate hikes and what impact that'll have. So there's a lot of factors, but that's all he has going for him. And the tax cuts have not had the intended impact that he had hoped they had.
No.
So he's going to have to exploit fear again, and it's going to be back at immigration, the wall. These people want to, you know, take over. They're, you know, that this is an invasion, you know, us versus them mentality. I mean, he's going to play that up as much as he can.
For me, Trump's not the biggest frustrating part of the immigration argument. It's the fact that the legislative branch has completely dropped this.
Oh, yeah.
Refuses they've abdicated their to pick this role up. Completely. And that's what's created the door for all of this. Trump has been able to push this forward simply because Congress, the House, the Senate, completely lacks the courage to do anything about this. And to your point, even when something has a 90% approval rating like the Dreamers,
right,
we can't even solve those issues.
No.
At some point, we're going to have to figure out what does the 21st century legislative body look like.
Well, I think that's a good point, because I think this lack of political courage in the legislative branch, I think it's systemic. I don't see it going away. We've been in this
cycle for 20 years now.
Right. And the problem is, I think, the two-year cycles. I mean, members of Congress are so afraid to make any type of drastic change because they know they'll be up for election in 2 years and they're going to lose face with one constituency or another, and they have to fundraise, and they immediately start fundraising as soon as they get elected.
I'll push back on that a little bit, because I did a whole bunch of research. I listened to our last podcast, and there's a stat that Mike threw out, so I'm going to blame him for this, that like 97% of people in Congress get reelected.
Right.
I looked it up, and for the past 10 elections, so for the past 12 years, it's actually 95%.
Okay.
95% of people in Congress get reelected. It's 86% of senators. It's a little harder in the Senate because you got to go statewide.
Right.
But once you get to Congress, unless there is something like the wave elections that happen every 10 to 15 years, and those are the last two have been caused by an individual political personality.
Right.
One in Trump is that Trump is so polarizing. Obama was polarizing in different ways. Your Congress seat, well, yes, you have to defend that turf every 2 years. It's pretty easy to keep yourself in power.
It is, yeah. Well, and I think that makes my point. I mean, you'd have to go back. Do you know how far back you'd go to see that number be less than 95%? Like,
I have to look it up. Less, I found this really good website that had this on it, but it went all the way back to like the 1850s in Congress. And it was, I mean, the line just keeps going up, up, up. To your point, you got to go back a long time before you get out of the 80% number.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty much entrenched now that once you get there, you can stay as long as you want.
But there is some type of factor at play, because if you look at the history of America and American governance, we had points in time where we had a lot of legislation that was enacted, a lot of impactful legislation. I mean, there's no way a constitutional amendment would ever be passed today
there's
on anything, because
no way.
They don't have the political there's courage no to do way. That. But we were able to do that in the past. Yeah. I mean, that's something that was able to get done. So I don't know what it is, but there's something that's very different in terms of how Congress is willing to act today, or the unwillingness to act versus before.
Now, I don't know what the answer to that is, but it feels like it's just going to keep going down, down, down until something craters. Yeah. And we've got to make kind of a core change to make that body viable again to what it used to be.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's this don't rock the boat mentality, yeah. Right? So don't upset the status quo. If you just keep everything moving along, you kind of you ensure your reelection, you know, again, barring like personality politics coming into play. Yeah. So it's, but yeah, the problem is it does the country no good because, I mean, we can't make progress on issues where there's just wide agreement.
So I've had a friend hit me up the last couple of days who is convinced now we've made a turn in the Mueller investigation with now that Manafort, this has happened where his deal possibly is off. Today I started getting texts from people about the article in The Guardian that went and visited Assange
at the Ecuadorian embassy. Right.
We have talked, I remember this summer when we walked through this, Paul Manafort is maybe the leader of this cabal of the dumbest criminal element that have ever tried to pull off a crime.
Right.
And maybe
they cover his tracks very well at all.
And maybe their defense is they were too stupid even to understand what they were doing was illegal. I have a very hard time believing Paul Manafort was stupid enough to walk into that embassy and visit Julian Assange. I would be shocked if somehow a photo or some evidence comes forward that validates that that actually happened.
You would be shocked if a photo came forward?
I can't believe he did that.
Yeah.
He's dumb. Don't get me wrong. And maybe he's that special breed of dumb and cocky. And
I was going to say, the only thing that might is arrogance, because he's extremely arrogant, and sometimes arrogance can account for those types of dumb, you know, but mistakes or behavior.
How did that photo in this story get kept under wraps for so long?
That's a good point, yeah. That's actually the first thing I thought is, why did this come out now? How come this didn't come out months ago during the trial?
So does Mueller have so much? So this story breaks that Manafort is breaking his plea deal. He's been lying to Mueller. There's a couple narratives here. One is that this destroys the Mueller probe. This was his star witness. This was the one feeding him data. Without this, the whole thing falls apart. I don't know if I
agree with that. There's enough other cooperating witnesses, and we don't know what type of information Mueller was able to get from Manafort prior to this happening. I mean, there was hours and hours that he spent giving testimony, so you can't undercount all of that.
Yeah. There's another theory is that this just shows you how much Mueller has, in that he knew Manafort was lying about something.
Yeah.
Manafort tried to pull a bunch of, hey, you know, I didn't do this, I did that. And he's like, yeah, you did. You did, because I've got it from multiple other sources. So there is one narrative that says, well, this just validates the depth of knowledge that Mueller has about what's been going on. And this actually strengthens his investigation.
Right. And I tend to kind of agree with that.
Well, you haven't heard my third one.
Oh, okay.
The third one is that Manafort has been a double agent all along.
Okay.
And he purposefully did this to try to sabotage the probe, knowing that he would get a pardon for anything that didn't go his way.
Well, and that's a good point, because I've heard speculation that Trump is more inclined to pardon him now. So if that was his goal all along.
But wouldn't once he talked to Mueller and swung a deal, a pardon would have come off the table, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I trust you once, you know, remember his stand strong, Paul,
right?
You know, and then when that fell away, I would thought to be like, okay, that's it. If you're Manafort, how do you reach out again and say, can I have the pardon now?
Yeah, I mean, you've lost all semblance of trust.
I would
this point.
Think so. I don't and know loyalty. How, I don't know how you keep that going. But
is strange. It's so strange either way, because he's either stupid or he's reckless or he's a double agent or he's arrogant. And all of it just seems to be so unlikely. I mean, you would just think common sense, again, even lowest common denominator would prevail in this type of case.
I keep waiting for us to cross into new ground. Hey, did you know that that WikiLeaks was involved in the hack? Well, of course we did. Trump, for 3 months, 4 months on the campaign, praised WikiLeaks every night.
Right.
Do you think the Russians? Well, of course they did. From the podium, Trump said, "Hey, Russia, go get those emails."
Yeah.
We've not crossed any new ground. We have not crossed out of the territory yet of Trump colluding in plain sight. Everything we've covered so far, from my perspective, is all just a validation of the collusion he did in the campaign, simply in front of everybody.
But Craig, that could speak to Mueller's capability of being able to keep this investigation tight and under wraps, so that isn't out there.
I'm good with that, but right. I want it. Give it to me.
Well,
we've been waiting on this for 2 years. I'm starting to agree with people that say, okay, wrap it up.
My feeling is it has to come out now, I think, before the end of the year.
I think it has to drop.
Yeah,
I get it. Kinstar went on for 6 years. But if you're old enough to remember that, that was Kinstar just rubbing one out every day on CNN. I mean, he totally...
Yeah.
It's hard to compare Kinstar to Mueller, because Kinstar literally held a nightly... hour-long press conference where he told you everything he was doing.
Right.
Kinstar was in this just to gloss himself and to make a name for himself. I think Robert Mueller's actually investigating a crime, which
is a huge
difference.
Yeah, he's taking this very seriously. Yeah, I mean, and it's a very different type of investigation, too.
But at the end of the year, it's time for an update.
Yeah.
It's time to say, okay, here's where we're going. Here's the evidence that we have. Here's the end game of where we're going to wrap this up and go. And I think it feels like it's about time for Mueller to do that.
It does. I mean, the longer it goes on, too, it just feeds into the hysteria that Trump puts out there and to his base, and the conspiracy theories about it being a witch hunt and all this. So it does need to wrap up sooner rather than later.
And Trump has ratcheted up his Twitter anger
rampage
over this.
Yeah.
I forget what he specifically... What I love about Trump now is they're all four-part tweets. He can't contain it in
one
tweet. It pulls over. But he has been as negative and as strong negative as he's ever been at Mueller. He's got the AG in place he wants now to provide whatever cover the AG's office is capable of providing. Let's go. Let's figure out who's doing what. We're entering in the third act. Let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get all this out there. You know, the interesting thing I've heard is speculation on if the evidence is overwhelming, there's something that's just very, you know, damning, detrimental. What does the House leadership do?
Yeah,
you know, do they impeach? I mean, assuming that Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker of the House, I mean, she, you know, very, you know, pragmatically has basically brushed aside, you know, impeachment calls. And it's not something the Democrats want to do. The question is, would they be forced into it if it, like, depending on if it's so overwhelming that they have to act and do something? Or do they, you know, just kind of, you know, draw it out and investigate until the next election? What happens?
Let me apologize to Nancy Pelosi, because I've been calling for her to be dumped for the past 2 years. Right now, I don't think as a Democrat, we don't have an option. We're heading into a very, very potentially rough time. We need somebody with her experience to guide us through this. There's nobody else. There's nobody else.
That's a problem. You had Seth Moulton for Massachusetts that's been trying to get together a group of Democrats, but there hasn't been any one leader or anybody who's
You hear what Marsha Fudge from Ohio, who was considering running? I know her last name's Fudge. I think it's Marsha. Did you hear her on MSNBC when Pelosi called her to her office and just laid out her planner in front of her and said, "I just want to show you the 150 hours a week it takes to do this job."
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
And after that, she even said on camera, I've got two kids. I just don't think I can do it. It was another instance of reminding you that Nancy Pelosi could teach a master class in politics and how to run the House of Representatives. She didn't have to come out and attack her. She didn't have to come out and challenge her. All she did was, let me show you what your life is,
what
you're
takes.
Signing up for.
Your life
if
is
you're cool
change.
With that, bring it on. Let's have a vote and let's see who wins. I think after that, most people were like, if Nancy wants to do it, we don't have anybody as strong because we got our bench wiped out since 2010. It's going to take us some time to rebuild before somebody can challenge that seat.
But I do think in time there is enough now where there is a
this
strong
is her
bench.
Last two
yeah,
years.
This has
with,
to be
without
yeah.
a doubt.
Yeah.
How about AOC? When we were warming up, I mean, I kind of AOC is kind of growing on me. She is a novice at what she's doing. But I give her credit for she's not letting that slow her down at all. And what's going to be really interesting now is she'll hold that seat as long as she wants.
Yeah.
There's no way you can gerrymander her out of Congress at this point. Coming back to her in 4 to 5 years, how much growth is she going to experience is going to be something really interesting to watch.
It will be, and I do think it'll be interesting to see how she wields that power, you know, when it comes to committee assignments, you know, what type of committee assignments does she get, chairmanships, I mean, is there leadership potential for her to rise? Again, national ambition isn't there because it might be there. But
it will be.
But the potential is very limited just due to she does not play well nationally.
I agree with you.
That's the issue.
So, I am not comparing her to Nikki Haley at all. Nikki Haley is light years, galaxies ahead of AOC and her involvement.
Yeah.
But at the same time where I said, as Democrats, don't sleep on Nikki Haley and don't discredit her. You got to keep your eye on her. Same way with AOC.
Agree. I mean, she provides
avoid her, make fun of her at your own peril. Or maybe a better way to say it is get your shots in now.
Yeah.
Because if she can progress, she's got some raw material that could be pretty good.
She has the potential to have some real staying endorsement power as well for Democrats that are seeking the 2020 nomination. Depending on, again, how she grows into this, she could be one of those who plays very well in Democratic primaries. So you could see Democrats within the primary angle trying to get her endorsement, be in her good graces.
If she finds a way to, and I hate the term intersectionality because that's what the Democratic Party is a lot about that right now.
Yeah.
But if she finds a way to intersect African-American, Latino women with the youth vote, she is going to scare the bejesus out of a lot of people in the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see a lot of people rallying to her side. So right now, she deserves every shot she gets. You cannot be a member of Congress and not know the three branches of government or name them wrong.
Right.
You cannot make unforced errors. And I was joking. I'm going to call my friend AOC tonight and tell her, listen, the Nazi references, you got to stop those. There's not, when you use a Nazi reference, you just show your ignorance.
Right.
If you can eliminate some of those types of things, and one, you can commit yourself to studying. You can commit yourself not only to promoting yourself through social media and spreading your message, which I agree, you're going to teach a master class to some politicians on how to do, but also increasing your depth of knowledge. You may have something in front of you that's pretty special.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But she's got to commit to doing the work on increasing her knowledge.
Yeah, and that remains to be seen. And I will also just note that there are a lot of young Democrats that were elected to the House this time around. So there's other young Democratic women, variety of districts. There's, you know, one out of Virginia, one out of Iowa. So there's a lot of potential for rising stars from the Democratic Party right now. So it'll be interesting to watch all
our
these
bench has
progress.
Been. We got a lot of our bench back.
Yeah.
It's weird to think that a year ago, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I'll do her the respect of trying to say her name
the
correctly.
Full name, yeah.
She was a bartender a year ago.
Yeah.
So for her to
bartender
get
to Congress.
From there to where she is now, that's an incredible achievement.
It is.
She applies the same type of work ethic and study that she did to get to where she is now. Give her a couple of years, and it'll be interesting to see what she becomes and turns into.
She's also been very relatable so far. So as a congresswoman-elect, she's been Snapchatting her orientation, her journey.
Yeah.
You know, and
apparently
that's not
the kids
a
love
congressperson
the Snapchat.
Has done. They do, yeah.
I can't follow it. Do you use Snapchat?
I don't. I have not picked that up.
It's not. Yeah, it's not meant for adults. You can't follow what's a story, what's a chat.
Well,
the interface is very weird.
And they go away after 24 hours, so they're not even permanent. It's a temporary.
Well, you can set some. As soon as you hit it, they go away.
Right.
Which to me is what you sending me that you only want me to view one time.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty. As I tell my kids, I'm dumb, but come on.
Yeah.
I'm not that dumb. Let's figure this out.
I feel like there's so many social media platforms right now. It's like, okay, I'm going to pick and choose the handful that I'm going to use and use actively because I can't do them all. And it's just,
there's so many little tidbitty things that just happened over the last couple of weeks too.
Yeah.
So many things that just kind of made you like, what?
Well, and then, you know, we have Russia seizing Ukrainian naval ships and 24 sailors. Which they still have in detention. In fact, there was just a judge in Crimea that ruled that they can be detained for 60 days. That's notable, too, because Crimea is 60 Russian.
60 days means like 60 years
to
Russia.
And let's not forget, a Crimean judge, Crimea is Russian controlled. Yes. Russia annexed Crimea. So it's basically an arm of the Russian government.
60
so
that's, days in Crimea means a life sentence, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and so again, this is a scary development because it's Russia flexing muscle in Ukraine. Again, in Ukraine borders a lot of Eastern European countries. If you look at borders Poland, if you look at Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, the Balkans, it's a powder keg. And so watching this closely, and so again, we have a White House that has been slow to react and slow to, you know, issue condemnations compared to our allies, like Great Britain and France and Germany.
Number one, Brandon, my president has told me NATO is obsolete and we don't need them.
Right.
So we don't need to wait for them or do anything for them. And two, isn't it true? I'm old enough to know, to remember Reagan's policy on Russia and that they will push until they hit a wall. And until somebody stands up and says, you've gone as far as you can go, they will just continue to move forward.
They're testing.
And I don't see any sign that Trump is going to say, that's enough. Settle down over there, and we're going to take a few steps to help you de-escalate some of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. I mean, this is a trend with Trump when it comes to Russia. And I don't see what gets him to change his mind. It's just it's not going to happen. But it speaks volumes that we have our allies that are out there condemning it much more forcefully than we are. Again, it's backwards.
Is it the G20 Thursday and Friday of this week?
Oh, God. Argentina, I think, is that where it is?
Every time the President of the United States travels overseas,
it's a disaster. Well, and look what happened. I don't know if we even talked about what happened with Veterans Day and him being abroad. Yeah. And
that...
I mean, that was appalling. I mean, he couldn't get out in the rain to go to the
cemetery. Why go to
cemetery?
France to sit in your hotel room and watch Fox News? I don't get that.
Well, and then
he didn't do it in Arlington either.
No, he did it. Veterans Day in the U.S. He didn't go out either. And it's like, really? And then, I mean, the message that sends. And here you have these other foreign leaders there that are celebrating Veterans Day, what they call Remembrance Day in the U.K. And we can't.
And that's a French cemetery full of American soldiers.
Yes, American soldiers.
I mean, that just, and as the President of the United States, you couldn't stand there and make a simple gesture of remembrance and gratitude. Again, there are these moments when Trump shows you exactly who he is.
Yeah.
That's one of them. That's just, again, my whole problem with the Trump presidency is there's things like that, his basically inability to string two sentences together. There are things that I will just never accept
from the
American president.
The general recently that he criticized. Yeah.
The guy who killed Bin Laden.
The guy
who captured Saddam Hussein.
Came out
an American hero. Tommy Armour? Am I saying that right?
I think
that's right. Maybe I'm close, probably.
Something like that. Yeah. That was appalling. Look at this guy's background. And, you know, I think Trump was doing an interview with Chris Wallace and cut
Hillary
him off.
Hillary supporter.
Yeah. It's like, no. And I mean, this guy has been, you know, non-political. I mean, you don't know who he supported. He's not out there being political.
And you can rip on Fox News. We're going to have a special section here in a minute on Fox News, but you can rip on their 7 to 10 o'clock shit show all you want. But Chris Wallace is a pretty, pretty down the middle of the road.
He's a very fair.
And he did not let Trump get away. He did not pull a Sean Hannity and back Trump on this. He pushed him and questioned him and gave Trump enough rope to eventually where he hung himself, where he gave that ridiculous answer about bin Laden. Well, wouldn't have been great if they got bin Laden sooner. He was sitting in a so-called mansion. I don't know. I've seen better. Yeah. And you can hear Wallace actually laugh when he said stuff like that.
You can't make it. You just see the president doing this, and it's appalling.
And what makes that sad is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
It's not a congressman. It's not a senator. It's not a pundit. That is what we like to call the leader of the free world.
Well, and I mean, it has ramifications far beyond our borders, a ripple effect throughout the world. And so he's overtly political. So Trump has to politicize everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. And you saw that happen. I mean, he got a rare rebuke from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who came out, I mean, and had to rebuke Trump, you know, saying that there are no Obama judges, you know, and for what he said. And then Chief Justice.
I will slightly defend. I'm not defending Trump, but I will slightly offend. I will slightly defend some of the right wing pundits like Hugh Hewitt, who basically say it is incredibly naive to not acknowledge that judges that have been appointed by Obama are extremely different than judges appointed by Trump.
Well, they are. No. And I think that's a key point. I mean, there's different ideologies. They have different philosophies,
different
judicial
decisions,
philosophies.
Different. It's a totally different world. And that's one of the right reasons people vote for Obama or Trump.
But I think
type of judges.
That is true. That is very true. But I think the problem is if you take that a step further and refer to somebody as a Bush judge or an Obama judge derisively and say, well, I can't get a fair shake because of this, that's taken it to a whole new level because you're questioning their impartiality, you know, when it comes to, you know, just ruling on the intent and letter of the law.
Like
that's
everything,
what is different.
Trump turns this into victimhood.
Yes.
And woe is me. And peddles in, and you've been victimized by a judge that, or he personally has been victimized by a judge who's out to get him because Obama appointed him.
Right. And so, yeah, and I think we all know that. Again, as president, you should have discretion with what you say and think about what you say. And again, because your words carry much greater weight. And again, we just time after time we go back to this because he doesn't do any of that, and it's over and over.
The glorious thing I saw today was so the White House and Sarah Huckabee Sanders gave their first press conference since Acosta got his press pass back.
Oh, okay.
And CNN in a gigantic middle finger to the White House and to Sarah Huckabee Sanders split the screen. And on one half of the screen, put up the CNN fast fact checker, and they fact checked her in real time.
Oh wow!
So
I've
when she said
before,
things
yeah.
about the climate report and that these people, you know, they don't represent. I'm paraphrasing here, but she said something about these people don't represent kind of all of the scientific community. They immediately put up 300 scientists signed off on this from 13 different federal agencies and so many agencies outside of the government. Then she rolled out the line, well, these people all have an economic agenda. The publishers of this report were not paid.
Yeah.
So they went point by point with her. As she said something that was obviously wrong, they fact-checked her. While I find that highly entertaining, it makes me somewhat sad that we've gotten to this point.
I mean, it's another threshold we've crossed that we haven't been at before with any prior.
Is this the point? Do we need to be here, though? There's a lot of people that would argue that, hey, if you don't like that we're here, you got to blame Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the administration for getting us here. They're the ones who kind of started this and pushed the whole, who pushed this so far that now it's acceptable for CNN to do this.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair point, and I think there's definitely a lot of blame to go.
Do you think CNN needed to do that, or do you think that's just them giving them a giant F you to Trump?
I mean, I think that's what it is. I think it's clearly the timing. I mean, yeah, come on. I mean, the when it happened.
What person doesn't know Sarah Huckabee Sanders that those press conferences are just one big gigantic lie fest? And that's not, they have taken it to the next level without a doubt. But have those things ever really been viewed
typically
as a sole source of
press secretaries have always been known, like, their role is to spin the narrative to be in the president's favor, you know, in yeah. terms of the questions are asked, they spin it, you know, they stall, they, you know, change the subject, they, you yeah. know, they have all these tactics at their disposal. Agree. That's what they do. I think it is different with this administration because other than just spin or deflect, or they've taken it to just outright lying or giving false information, yeah. sometimes knowing it's false, other times not. But it doesn't speak well because it's like, where do we go from here? I'm sure that they're going to continue using that. They'll probably do the split screen yeah. now indefinitely. Like, they're not going to go back.
Got a ton of retweets.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they just created another piece of content that they can put out in their channel. Have you paid your $5.99 to sign up for Fox Nation yet?
I have not. No. is that a monthly subscription fee? Yeah. Okay.
Think if Fox News started Netflix.
Okay.
I didn't even realize
this had launched. Yeah.
I can see this. You're trying to piece this together yeah, and this. You really can't. So in some ways I will massively make fun of this. In other ways.
So is it just supposed to be news or is it supposed to be premium news content you wouldn't otherwise get from Fox News?
It's specials, it's news, it's geared at a much younger crowd. Fox is the number one news cable
yeah.
network. Their average guest or their average viewer, I believe, is 65.
I think that's right.
And
yeah.
that's not much older than MSNBC and CNN.
Yeah.
What Fox News has concluded, as everybody has, cable news is in its final act.
Dying.
My kids who are 18 in college, no kid in college has a cable subscription.
Right.
So they're looking for ways to connect with that next generation audience. So these are a combination of news packaged in different ways, more personality driven, more host driven. The hosts are younger, the stories are lighter. They're mixed in with, you can watch Steve Doocy in a cooking show.
Okay.
I don't know why any human being would want to do that, but
there's
an entertainment aspect to it.
Plays
and there's no cross pollination between this and Fox News.
Okay.
You're not going to see Shep Smith, Chris Wallace, you know, Brett Baer. They're on the flagship. They stop any live content at 7, so they're not stealing any market share from their night lineup. But while the content on this sounds absolutely horrifying, there's a documentary called Borked that talked about Bork's failed yeah. attempt.
Supreme Court, yeah.
Again, I'd rather scrape my eyes out with a spoon than watch this. I do applaud that every network is going to try something like
similar,
this.
Yeah, this is the future.
You've got to find a way to figure out how to get the next generation behind us to consume your product.
And your
this
content,
is Fox's
yeah.
attempt to do it.
Well, it's interesting because they've had the Fox Nation moniker around for a while. They've yeah. used that on their online
yeah.
News and print. So that's they're adapting it for this yeah. streaming content model. That's
so they've been thinking about this for a long time.
It'd right.
be interesting to see if they ever release any type of numbers on what this is. Because
yeah,
I think this is, to me, this is, let's do step one. Let's learn some lessons.
Could do well. It could bomb.
That's right. I mean, if yeah. this bombs out, we won't think of it that much as a fail because we're going to learn some things that when we reconstitute and go again, this idea is not going to die. And let's be the first to market, and we'll see if we can't capture something before another network gets there.
Yeah, you know, first to market has its advantages. So
young conservatives. I mean, there's got to be a load of them out there, I would think.
There's some. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they get on there to be. Tony Lauren, or you know,
it's like Brett McHenry. So there's a whole class of Fox. There's no other way to say it. Fox blondes.
Yeah,
they're Tommy, Lori, Brett McKinnon, they're all cookie cutters of each other.
Right.
There's the guy Tyrus, who's Greg Gutfeld's like bodyguard slash. Okay. He used to be a wrestler.
Oh.
He's really funny.
Huh.
I mean, he might be the one person that did a show on Fox Nation I'd watch. And then it's just, you know, Steve Doocy is just a goof.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this and what it does. Huh.
to check that out. Yeah,
we may have to get a $5.99 subscription for research for 2 minutes of the metal.
Be able to review and provide analysis.
I just don't see. Oh, and now that Trump told us the United States government's going to start its own cable network.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
the United States. You know.
Because they're not good enough at getting their propaganda out. They need an official news arm.
Maybe we should buy some airtime on that to promote the podcast.
There you go.
So I think that's our hour. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.